from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Dave Iverson. This half hour, we're talking about living history, ahead of a community summit tomorrow called Sustaining San Francisco's Living History. In a city undergoing tremendous economic changes, ever-increasing real estate costs are pushing many longtime residents and businesses out of the city. What can we do to support what makes San Francisco interesting without holding back the force of this latest gold rush? Well, joining us in studio today, we've got three very interesting guests. Mike Bueller, Executive Director of San Francisco Heritage, a nonprofit working to preserve and enhance San Francisco's architectural and cultural identity. Mia Gonzalez of Encantada Gallery in San Francisco's Mission District. And Alan Martinez, architect and former member of the San Francisco Historic Preservation Commission. Thank you all for being here. I'm wondering, Mike Bueller, if you could start us out with a discussion of what's happening tomorrow. What is this summit about?
Well, San Francisco Heritage is convening this summit from 10 until 3:30 tomorrow. And this is really a culmination of a few years of outreach efforts on behalf of our organization working in cultural communities throughout San Francisco, including Japantown, the Mission District, the Filipino community south of Market, all of which are struggling with developing strategies to retain their cultural identity and the businesses and organizations and residents that really enliven these communities. So the concept behind the summit is to bring these disparate communities together, help them learn from each other as to the strategies they're developing, and identify best practices and policy recommendations going forward that the city can adopt to help protect and sustain these communities.
What is the biggest challenge as far as you see it?
Well, this project really, one of the key things we've been seeing in recent years is heritage businesses being displaced, whether it be bars like the Tonga Room, the Eagle, or the Gold Dust Lounge, and even, of course, this week, Marcus Books, other types of businesses that are beloved in their communities, play a significant role in their character, yet do not lend themselves perhaps to traditional historic preservation strategies like landmarking. Landmark designation will not protect these businesses and help sustain them. So the work of the focus of the summit is to find ways to address those challenges that these businesses are facing.
Alan Martinez, I guess the first question I would put to you guys is you can't hold back a tsunami with a teaspoon. I mean, if there's a whole group of wealthy newcomers coming in who don't feel the same passion for a particular bar or a particular bookstore, how do you keep those alive? Do we hand out rent subsidies to each one of them?
Well, I think it's important to notice. I mean, when I was on the commission, we saw, you know, these issues around the Gold Dust Lounge and the Eagle particularly came up. But it wasn't really in our purview because we deal with buildings. But they were both successful businesses. They weren't businesses that were not bringing in income. There were other reasons for the displacement. So we're not talking about forcing a business that no longer has any economic viability to still exist, but we are talking about ways to support and maintain businesses that the community does care about and does patronize. So I don't think it's such a simple process as what you're saying, that it's one thing or the other. I think, you know, we can definitely have new businesses and new enterprises, but I think there is a certain segment of businesses that do more for the city and more for communities than provide jobs. They provide, you know, semi-public meeting spaces. They provide cultural continuity. They, you know, have deep meaning. They, you know, provide ethnic practices or whatever that really have quite a bit of social significance. And so these are businesses that really do more than just, you know, the typical things businesses do. And so I think we need to start distinguish and recognize that there are some types of businesses that do make an extraordinary contribution to the life of the city, and seeing ways whether or not we can make it more worth the while of property owners to have these businesses in their buildings, like property tax breaks if you have a heritage business on your property, or things that community groups can do, not just government, but what community groups can do, what in terms of making sure businesses are well publicized and patronized and so on. So, I mean, part of the reason that we're having this summit is to explore ways and explore thinking about this.
I suppose the most obvious recent example of what you're talking about is Marcus Books, this wonderful, oldest, continuously running black bookstore in San Francisco, in the Fillmore District, in a beautiful Victorian, bad decision made during the last housing downturn, is really what led to their being forced out by a new landlord now.
Yes. I don't know the details of that particular situation and what.
It's really a common theme that we've seen in all of the instances where rising property values are really impacting these businesses, whether they own the building or if they rent from the building. Now, one of the ideas we're going to be discussing at the summit tomorrow is what other cities have done to address this. Washington, D.C. Provides some really innovative models for property tax breaks for heritage businesses. In fact, right now they have legislation pending to provide property tax benefits to culturally significant music establishments focused on potential displacement of Jazz Alley, which is a famous jazz venue in Washington, D.C. So, it's important to look beyond San Francisco as to what has been experimented with in other communities. And Washington, D.C. has also discussed having credit assistance where business owners such as Marcus Books potentially could have a partial government backing of loans to help sustain their businesses that perhaps would have avoided the circumstance we're seeing this weekend with the pending eviction.
We should mention that at least they have a store in Oakland, and that is something else to consider, that there are other communities in the wider Bay Area that also love and support their historic institutions.
Well, I know of at least one business, which I don't want to name right now, but their problem has to do with the San Francisco bureaucracy and the way certain departments in the city government decided to rearrange how some of their processes happen, and it's really affecting this business in a very negative way. So that would be something that would be relatively simple to try to fix, to say, well, this is a heritage business and they need help from these departments to straighten this situation out. So I think part of the reason that we're having this summit is that we want to talk to people and find out what their problems are, what are the issues that affect these businesses.
Mike Buehler, out of curiosity, where do you draw the line? I mean, obviously a long-running bookstore, we can imagine a great bar that, serves an iconic drink. Does our love, does this umbrella extend to include things like a video store?
Well, this is a critical question, and the first step in protecting these types of businesses is developing a methodology and criteria for identifying them in the first place. In Japantown, I failed to mention earlier, the city planning department has put a lot of resources into a multi-year planning process working with the community to inventory the significant buildings, businesses, organizations, festivals that all comprise the cultural character of that community. And they recently published that methodology, and it's part of a larger economic and cultural heritage strategy for the neighborhood that is set for adoption in July, actually, by the Planning Commission and then the Board of Supervisors. So San Francisco actually has done a lot of groundbreaking work in defining the methodology for identifying businesses and organizations that should qualify for this type of assistance. And other cities have as well. And there are a lot of models out there. There's a really innovative program in Buenos Aires, actually, in Argentina, where Bares Notables, where they've identified about 75 bars, restaurants, confectionaries as special heritage businesses that qualify for this honorific designation, which comes with government funding to help them with facade improvements, other things that will help market and sustain their businesses. So that is an important first step, though, is defining that methodology and working with the community, frankly, to identify the places that are significant for individual neighborhoods.
Mia Gonzalez, you own a business in San Francisco's Mission District, one of the hottest neighborhoods. That you must be worried all the time about making rent and what the rent might be next year.
Well, it's exactly the situation now. I've been in the neighborhood for the last 16 years, and as a small business owner, we began when there was the gang violence. I mean, we've seen every aspect of it. And I think it's because of small businesses, we actually kind of help retrain the neighborhood in many respects by making the neighborhood, making this, in this point, 16 years ago, Valencia Street was not a quote-unquote safe neighborhood. So people wouldn't want to walk in the area. There was a sort of an atmosphere of fear. But because we decided to make our business a safe environment, people began to come to the neighborhood. Of course, the neighborhood itself began to change. The streets changed. There was from a four-laned area down to two lanes, to bike lanes. It went on and on and on. and then it says park lanes, and then parkettes came in. And it actually became difficult as well for small business owners to have people park. Parking became another issue. My building that I've been in for 16 years has been sold at least 5 times.
Wow.
At least 5 times. We are under a new ownership. And I just recently received my notice. Now,
and that's an eviction notice you're talking about?
My eviction notice.
Yeah.
So we're trying to negotiate with the landlords to maintain our business in the neighborhood. Now, if Encantada is forced to move, that just means another cultural program, service and icon, I would like to say, to be removed. I've been coining a new term recently called urban deportation.
Urban deportation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's exactly what it feels like, being an urban person deported out of my own community. I'm a native San Franciscan. You know, we've developed a number of services here in the community. We provide services within our Encantada, from workshops, and we've done a number of Day of the Dead, and it goes on and on and on. We do a lot of Frida imagery, as you can see. We brought a Frida with us today, but we feel that it's also been an area, not just more than a shop. It's been a place where other Latinos and non-Latinos come to look for those particular items that they could decorate with or take home. It's keeping in touch with your cultural connection.
The mission really is a community where you see different communities jostling alongside each other, not necessarily in connection with each other. The hipsters headed to the latest hot, you know, neo-Calatel restaurant aren't necessarily looking for the Frida Kahlo exhibit.
Actually, they are, because Frida is a popular icon. And she crosses the board.
She transcends.
She transcends. And now everybody wants to be a Fridaite somewhere along the line. No, Frida and the Virgin, there are hot girls for us in Encantada.
Well, we'd like to hear from you. Whether you live in San Francisco or just love to visit, give us a ring at 866-733-6786. Now that you have your pen out, 866-733-6786. We also read email at forum@kqed.org. You can post online at our website, kqed.org/forum. And, of course, we've got a Facebook page. What's your experience? What kind of diversity are you looking to protect? Or do you think that it should be dog-eat-dog out there? I suppose, Mike Bueller, as I'm listening to this, I also think, too, specifically with the mission, it seems like every other business is a restaurant. Some people say, you know, enough is enough. Other people say, let the strong survive and the weak die out. But there's this other question of diversity, which is that it takes more than one kind of business to make a neighborhood thrive.
Absolutely. And to, again, go back to Japantown, they've really done a lot of work to inventory the diversity of not just businesses, but nonprofit organizations, schools, festivals, et cetera, that really comprise that comprehensive neighborhood identity. And I absolutely agree it's important to maintain that diversity of businesses and residents and organizations in order to have a thriving community. And that's really one of the goals of what we're trying to accomplish.
It's interesting that you mentioned Japantown. There's a place that a lot of people go to get some flavor of Japanese culture, but a lot of young Japanese San Franciscans have moved out to other neighborhoods. It's not like we can forcibly repatriate them back to the correct neighborhood.
No, and actually, you know, it's interesting. There's a parallel with the gay community, and that, you know, fewer and fewer LGBT people live in the Castro. However, it still stays very strong as a regional center for people to go to. And I think Japantown is exactly the same way. It's a regional cultural center for wherever people live. And I really, to go back a little, I really want to get away from this sort of mentality of protecting. I think what we're talking about is maintaining, enriching, keeping alive, but not. I mean, a government, you can't legislate that a business stay in business. You know, that, right. We don't want to do that. That's not what we're talking about. But if we can remove government obstacles, if we can, you know, through the city can choose whether or not it's going to reassess a property, for instance. So if, a business that's designated, if it's, you know, if we say, well, if a building has a culturally significant business, the property won't be reassessed as long as that business stays, no matter how many times it's been sold, that becomes worth someone's while to keep that business in the building. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about, not legislating that something can never change.
Just a little bit of softening of the rules to allow
support.
Let's turn now to the phones. We've got Cyril in San Francisco.
Yes, hello. I'm calling. First of all, can we say when the Gold Duck Lounge moved? This was part of our Christmas tradition, going there, having a glass of champagne. But I am concerned about the fairness of allowing certain businesses to have a lower cost of operating versus a competitor, because it turns out that at the end it's all about who you know and what connections you have and how hip or cool your thing is. And it just doesn't seem fair. I think at the end of the day, we have to treat all businesses the same.
What do you have to say to that, Alan Martinez, the worry that, you know, it's not fair to put some folks on a preferred list?
Well, I think that's something to consider. I mean, whatever process of designation that we come up with, I think fairness does have to be considered in that public process. I think it has to be very clear that this business or institution is providing a service to the community above and beyond, something, you know, of really greater value than the ordinary business. I mean, it can't be every bar. It has to be a bar or a restaurant that really does provide something extraordinary to San Francisco. So I think that's, you know, and then you have to define, you know, what that entity is.
You have to define extraordinary. I mean, the Gold Dust Bar in Union Square is one of a handful of, like, tiny little gems that have managed to survive in a very commercial retail district. But, you know, one person's extraordinary bar is another person's old washed-up bar.
True, but we do have a parallel in how we arrive at these sorts of decisions with the landmarking process for aesthetic and historic significance. So there is a parallel, a blueprint of how to go about doing this in a way that is public, that's fair, that's balanced. But I do think that is something that has to be taken into consideration. But I do think it has to be clear that whatever we're supporting has a clear, you know, and substantial benefit to the city.
I think it's also worth noting that the city has devoted resources to attracting new businesses and incentives to attract new businesses, larger businesses to the city. And in some respects, providing similar assistance to longstanding businesses and institutions that really define San Francisco is leveling the playing field. And I do agree with Alan that it's important to establish clear, defensible criteria for identifying who should qualify. But it's important to note that the city has provided resources to bring in new businesses.
Let's turn now to Glenn in San Francisco.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My comment really was more to do with how I feel like the population's change that's moving to San Francisco, where I think historically San Francisco has had a reputation as a place to come on various levels to sort of find yourself, to explore new ways of living, to it's just kind of had a rebel streak as a unique place that's safe for various communities and cultures. And now it seems primarily people are moving to San Francisco to get rich and make money, and you see that with this, you know, the new thousands of units that are going up, and the minimum price for a unit is $2,000, which is it's just staggering, you know, and there's no balance for people that aren't on that track or not interested. And it's such a small city that I just feel like it's getting ravaged, and there's a sinkhole of culture. Artists are moving out, people are leaving, and you're left with this sort of hollow, shiny thing that's nice to look at. And it's not that it's always going to be that way, but I just think the balance needs to come back, and I don't know how you do that. But
Mia Gonzalez, I mean, you've been here your whole life, and you've seen, I mean, it must be said, since the days of the gold rush, people have been coming to San Francisco to get rich.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that's what, for where we are in the Mission and 1 Valencia Street, it feels like a gold rush. Very recently, somebody was called Valencia Street the Golden Arches, and I thought, oh, how scary is that? But it's very true. Our people who come in and out of the Encantada, they're those who are very familiar with the neighborhood and those who have moved away, and they're so concerned about the changes, and they don't like the change. They feel like the city or the Mission for them doesn't belong to them anymore. They just can't be here.
Is that how you feel personally?
I hadn't felt that until very recently.
What was the changing moment for you? Was there like one thing you saw and said, okay, that's it, that's really changed now?
I think the threat of knowing that you no longer can belong here, just as the last caller just said, beyond the eviction notice. It's letting you know that you are no longer viable to this community, and you can't afford to be here. If you can't pay $2,000 a month for a 400 square foot place or less, then you have no right to be here. It's the livability, the rights to live in San Francisco are diminishing.
Steve in Sacramento.
Hi, I can't imagine greater lunacy than the proposal you people are discussing. Well, I would separate the idea of having subsidies to allow people who have lived there a long time to remain, not businesses. Businesses are supposed to be fragile and creatively destroyed. Who's to say that the new business you are preventing from going into Martha's Books by providing some space or some subsidy to it would not become even more beloved and even more of an institution? If this had been in place during the time of Harvey Milk, all the businesses in the Castro would be supporting Irish Catholic families, not the gay community and the new young families that are moving in. The entire point of a business is it has to survive in the marketplace. If it can't survive in the marketplace, it should go away, however much beloved. The idea that you're going to decide someone is a historic business is going to boil down to, frankly, I don't care what the regulations do, the businesses I like are historic and the businesses you like can go away. This is a terrible idea.
Well, who wants to take that one on? Alan Martinez?
I mean, Hobbes is an ideology, not a truth. What I just heard is ideology. Mm-hmm. It's something we choose. I love what Hannah Arendt said about Hobbes. She said, it's a Hobbesian universe if we decide it is. You know, it's up to us. We don't really live in a dog-eat-dog world. It's not the war of all against all. We have tempered that with something called civilized society. So this is the same sort of thing. Some businesses do provide social services and community services above and beyond simply being a vending machine. So I just have to disagree with the last caller.
But what about this idea? I mean, like, for instance, I think of, remember the coffee revolution. We've all lived through it, right? There was this kind of acrid stuff you could clean your driveway off with, but you could get it for like 25 cents a cup. And many of the people who had gotten used to that were very upset when the $3 latte rolled into town. But a lot of people, myself included, think it's a better situation, a better quality coffee, even if I have to pay more for it.
I don't see anything, I see no contradiction between that and what we're doing. I mean, this is not, we're not talking about every business. We're not talking about, shutting down and change and that sort of thing in any way. I mean, this always comes up about, I mean, especially in historic preservation, like that you're stopping progress. And I guess my notion of progress is very different than sort of fetishizing change for the sake of change. To me, progress means that life as a whole becomes better and richer, which may include, you know, that you have museum. You know, you don't throw away the old art. just because it's old. And then we have museums because we just, you know, because these accomplishments are important. So, you know, a lot of historic preservation to me is about a relationship that comes sort of out of family and caring, and that we have family heirlooms that we use but still have significance to us.
Steve, do you want to come back to that?
Yes, I would. First of all, I think there's a vast difference between supporting people in a Hobbesian universe, which I certainly agree we need to have social institutions, and I certainly think taking care of our population is an excellent idea. And I also think that nonprofit organizations that fill a niche do need to be supported. But the entire point of a business is to fill a market need. In order for new businesses to form, old businesses must die. There is a limited amount of space. There are limited economic resources, and they have to be allocated in a way that is most efficient to provide a greater economic pie for everyone. Whatever business you sustain, you're making sure another business does not come into an existence. And however nice that old business is, and however bad the new business might eventually be, the fact is, these decisions have to be made, and no one's going to make them perfectly. So sometimes we're going to have old businesses that get destroyed and bad new businesses, and sometimes we're going to have old businesses destroyed and vastly better new businesses will take their place.
Steve, I'm going to have to let Mia Gonzalez just wrap in here. You know, is there hope that you might find another home in San Francisco? In just a few seconds.
I'm hoping we can. You know, there's another consideration of 24th Street, which mm-hmm. would be another area that we're looking at as another cultural heritage neighborhood, you know, the preservation of that neighborhood.
So the gallery might survive just a few blocks away.
It may. I'm hoping not to have to move. You know, in place of what they want, the consideration is another restaurant. How many more restaurants can Valencia Street handle? And in my one of my note I want to say is that it's the businesses during the day that bring a neighborhood alive. And those people who visit your retail, they will go to your restaurant at night.
Well, with that, last words from Mia Gonzalez, owner of Encantada Gallery in San Francisco's Mission District. Thank you, too, to Mike Bueller, Executive Director of San Francisco Heritage, and Alan Martinez, architect and a former member of the San Francisco Historic Preservation Commission. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro, in for Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.